Come in and sit with us. We're four friends, talking, thinking, and laughing. We take on the absurd and the profound, sometimes both at once.
And we speak about aging because, oh, yes, we're living it, feeling it in our bones. First time for all of us.
And we don't plan to go quiet. We prod, we tease, we wander down strange roads. A story here, an argument there, a joke, maybe a truth.
Dylan Thomas said it best, "Do not go gentle into that good night." We won't. We'll burn, we'll rage, we'll keep moving. We'll take care of each other as we go.
Hi, welcome to Seniors in the Building. I'm Signe.
I'm Jack.
I'm Elaine.
And I'm Rick.
Good morning, and welcome to Seniors in the Building. Today, we are talking about nurturing and how our need for nurture might change as we're growing older. Things like our relationships with our children, the need for a different kind of nurturing. I think premises with how our fierce independence as we grow older turns into vulnerability, and how does that change our need for nurturing?
Yeah.
So, who wants to start?
Well, it made me think about when we took a vacation one year, and one of our sons said to me, "Are you guys crazy? 63-year-olds don't go and hike the Camino, right?" And made us stop and think, why not? We're still independent. We can still walk, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they had a different sense of who we are at that point in our life.
But 63 is hardly senior.
Yeah. Yeah, but to them, I guess
it
is.
But to them.
Yeah.
From this 74 perspective. It's young.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah,
it's
being a whippersnapper, young. Yeah.
Yeah. And we thought we were being quite independent.
But that's it, right? It's how does your ability, we've talked about driving, and we've talked about how as you're older, you need to think about driving differently and strategically drive differently.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, most accidents for seniors happen in parking lots. And so parking in a pull-through so that you don't have to back out is a key.
Because you can't turn your rigid body.
Turn around and look, and you can't look 365.
I remember talking to my brother years ago about eye movement, because we were both hockey players. And, you know, just move the eyes left and right. Now so much more slowly that happens.
Yeah.
Our reaction time is slower.
Right, yeah.
And we had a neighbor, I think I can say, in Kitchener, who had to have his peripheral vision checked and found it was very poor when he had been in an underground parking lot and simply turned the car right into a post.
Oh, yeah.
The whole side of the car got wiped out.
Yeah. Right.
Because he couldn't judge that it was that close to him.
Yeah.
Well, you can see in our building here in the parkade, certain cars have these scrape marks along the sides, and you go, somebody didn't see the post there.
Okay, we're not raising confidence about seniors driving.
No. Yeah.
No, but it talks about how we thought we had these great capabilities and we're pretty independent, and now we're kind of vulnerable with the health changes, right? Where the eye changes, the eye movement changes.
Reaction time.
Reaction time changes or whatever.
Even comfort behind the wheel now with so much traffic and being just having to make snap decisions and those kinds of things while driving. And it's not just driving, it's other things as well. But driving, I think, is the key in terms of, you know, doctors having to make sure that you are fit to drive. And we were registering our cars at the motor vehicle place here, and somebody was trying to get their license back after the doctor had written and
suspended it away
from them, and it's not easy to get it back. Mm-hmm. From the conversation, I didn't mean to overhear, but you couldn't help but.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's it. Sort of the driving thing is a big sign of independence for us. I mean, Thinking back to when you were a teenager and that, to get your driver's license was a huge rite of passage. No,
it's a huge rite of passage to
keep it. Yeah, because you lose a lot of, you know, the ability to just go where you want to go, when you want to go. And the independence is huge. So that's sort of a sign of a loss of independence. And and it can be really disturbing. Like you said, I remember talking to some elderly people, you know, losing their licenses and how traumatic it was for them. Yeah. And at the time, not quite getting it, but now you can see. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even 4 years ago, I remember David saying to us, don't drive after dark on your way out to us, right? To where they lived, right? Yeah. And I was like, are you kidding me? I drove this whole province, like up and down, middle of the night, coming home at midnight sometimes, driving
it's
somewhere.
It's not so important to see at night.
No.
There's lights.
There's lights coming towards you.
The car has lights, you know.
Well, I remember the
but
shop.
I see it now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's more difficult, apparently, night driving for elderly. But my first appointment with my GP, when I finally got one here, I was shocked for her to go through with me a basic medical, like, how's your vision? And she'd hold her a little light up, and I'd look sideways. She says, keep your head straight and look sideways to see if I can see laterally, peripherally.
Yeah. Right.
And checked my reflexes, like a whole workout.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah. And I thought, come on, I'm fine.
But probably. But an annual physical has been different. Like, I've had the same doctor for 25 years, and the annual physical has changed in about every decade, right? The kind of questions that get asked or whatever. And I even remember saying, what about my pap smear? I think it was when I was 55 or 60, and she's, oh, we don't do those regularly anymore. And I'm like, what? But I guess I was trying to figure out, does that mean because they don't care if I get cancer, you know, at this age? No, or what? But I understand that there are different needs in the healthcare system, and maybe they don't have to check 65-year-olds for cancer.
Yeah, it's based on their incidences of cancer in terms of age.
Right.
You know, my mother was shocked when she didn't have to have that anymore at 70, and she says they don't care about you after that.
Yeah.
And isn't that part of the need to nurture, the sense that people don't care? That even if that's a legitimate medical concern, the impact it sometimes has on you is like, well, they just don't care anymore. And there's other instances where people who reach their senior years just feel like they are just put aside and nobody cares. So the need for nurture has changed, but our sense of being cast aside, I think, I don't know, exacerbates or magnifies that sense that we are just no longer people who are needed. And is that, I don't know, what to say about that?
Yeah, what to say about that? It is a reflection of both, you know, the healthcare system and how those peak years for certain types of diseases and things, when they pass, then you don't need to be screening for them as much anymore. I mean, that's a reality. But the other thing is the box that sort of puts you in, or the space that sort of puts you in terms of, oh, so now if I am at risk, or if I start to see symptoms of something, then that puts the onus back on me to be following up and doing what I need to be vigilant about it.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, okay, we don't need to worry about that anymore, but I still do.
Yes.
Yeah. I still need to be making sure that my body is still functioning and working. And
it also happens, I mean, it's also another part of aging that sort of disturbs me, is every time a new added health situation comes upon, and I'm like, why does this disturb me so much? Well, I think part of it is, here comes another thing that I can't do, right?
Yeah, I wait for the next shoe to drop all the time.
I know. So I had my eyes checked, and one of the things she the computer took a picture of my dry eyes, right, where the film is separating and it's not covering my whole eye and protecting it, right? And so now I have to, you know, do a heating pad on it so many times a week, and I have to take drops 4 times a day. And so it's added this one other aspect to it. I'm like, I couldn't believe how anxious I was about adding one more health issue on to it.
Yeah, and it's like a reminder.
Yeah.
Every time you do it.
Oh. Yeah, I gotta for another appointment, I've got to figure out, what do I have to adapt now?
One more thing to follow up on.
Yeah.
Exactly. Gets to be very tiring.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So your shoe drops, right? What happens when your shoe drops, though?
Well, you just gather the energy little that you have left, and you get on with the day.
Mm-hmm. Or complain. Sorry, I do that.
Well, Jack fights it.
Or fight it, yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't know if I fight it.
Well,
But nurturing is...
You wouldn't have a shunt if you hadn't pursued.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And I probably still have my... what did they take out here?
Your gallbladder.
My gallbladder.
Gallbladder. Okay, all right, yeah.
They're taking out pieces of something.
You're not the person you used to be.
No. I'm only half the person I was when he married me, right?
The rest is bionic.
The rest is bionic, or, you know, something else added to it. But
I do have an AI assistant. And the AI assistant tells me that nurturing is multifaceted. Mm-hmm. We're talking about physically needing to be nurtured.
Right. Yeah.
And luckily we have a healthcare system that does that.
Pretty well.
And I think it's pretty well compared to down south.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then there's emotional nurturing, social nurturing,
yeah,
which I think we struggle with a little bit, even though that can be through the grandkids, and that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of friendship circles, you guys are it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then there's spiritual nurturing, mm-hmm, which I don't even like to say that term because we're unchurched, and I tend to equate it in my own mind as being churched, which is not necessarily the case, because doing contemplative practice and meditation is a form of nurturing.
Yeah, very much so.
Spiritual nurturing. And then there's one that I wouldn't have thought of, and that is cognitive nurturing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Tell me more.
Well, I'm not sure I can.
Oh, okay. can't think about that.
Can't remember. No.
Well, what the AI said is that it's a layer that's often ignored. And it's the aging mind being hungry for stimulation.
Oh, yes.
Puzzles, reading, learning new skills, and engaging in thoughtful discussions that keeps you cognitively functioning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And doing the podcast is part of that, I think.
Oh, I think
I
so
think
so
that's
too.
A
yeah.
big part of this mm-hmm. cognitive
We're trying
thing.
To stay cognitively functional.
But yeah. We're also trying to be in the times that we're in, right? Because podcasting is this, it's a trend right now, right? And I think... For me, this is like I'm learning something new. Even though I'm going to be 70 years old, I'm learning something new. And that's a cognitive need for me, right? Because I can read a book on my own anytime I want, and I can blurt out some facts occasionally about what I read and everything. But that's not quite the same as forcing yourself to learn something new. Or like I did with going to the balance class at the gym, right?
Mm-hmm.
I had to learn there, you know, something new. My mind had to get around. What does that mean? You know, balance is affected by the food you eat. Like, so the diet, the place you live in, the context you're living in. It's not just about
body.
Having your body, the physical thing, right? I think the same thing about the nurture. I really appreciate that, Jack.
We need mental engagement.
Yeah. So, but it sounds like a lot of that you listed makes really good sense, but that therefore it takes personal initiative.
Yes.
You know, it just won't come rolling down to you, and which is interesting because often when I hear the word nurture, I think of a passive thing, you know, where someone else is always caring for you or coddling you or doing things for you. But this is more of a nurture where there has to be a lot of personal engagement and advocacy.
Intentionality.
Intentionality, yeah, maybe that's a better word, yeah.
Well, it's self-nurture, right?
Yes, yeah.
It is, what do you do to nurture yourself through this growing older thing?
Yeah.
And how do you continue to have all those things in place that you talked about, Jack, the social nurturing and, and all of that.
And
emotional nurturing, which is what you're more talking about, sort of that that caring for, not necessarily
being cared,
patronizing, but being genuinely cared about and cared for in that context. It takes work to continue to do that. And it takes living and breathing and being in the moment and thinking, how do I navigate this these new things I have to add into my health regime that it just makes me mad because it's another sign of my vulnerability.
Right.
In many ways, that's what it is.
And to reframe it as, okay, this is something else I can learn about myself or new or whatever.
Well, I wonder if...
Invite it as a... Yeah, I don't quite know how to, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's this is just the way it is. I guess it's an acceptance, right? Too, at some point of, okay, it's just the way it is, and I'll do what I can, and I'll do my best, and I am enough. Like, I can do more than I can do. At this
point. Yeah, and I think that increased vulnerability that inevitably comes with aging on all of these dimensions of need that grow is intensified when we listen to the bloody news so much. Because the world does seem like, now that we're old or aging, the world is falling apart. And we have no agency. We have so little agency. Like, if I was still in the classroom, I'd be talking about climate change almost every day, or talking about what's happening in the United States of America.
Or elsewhere.
Yeah. Or elsewhere,
I mean, there's a worldwide scary part,
yeah.
But one of the things I was thinking of, though, is back to the intentionality thing, is that by being intentional, by being aware of this, we don't wind up being just put in a box, you know, that somehow, okay, nurture, you know, we will take care of you, you just sit on the sidelines. Rather, the self-nurture, the term that you used, indicates that there are means and ways that we are able to care for ourselves, care for one another, and accept perhaps the nurture from family or friends that is acceptable, but also the stuff that we say, no, I don't need to go down that road. I don't need to necessarily accept that. You know, I think that's all kind of important for us to take into account. So, yeah.
And how it makes me think of children, our children, and how they have to navigate. Talked about this a little bit, but how they have to navigate are getting older as well, and their take on it, and their, I mean, they know us pretty well. They,
you know, they put up with us.
They put up. I mean, it's a mutual thing. But but as roles change, I think it becomes a little bit. I mean, it's new for them too to have older, aging parents.
Yeah. So and the nurtured becomes
and how,
the nurturer.
How do
Hopefully.
How do you continue to be in the relationship with your children and still have it be still have it be mutual in terms of I don't. So what we give each other changes, I think.
Yeah.
What we share with each other changes. Well, how we can support each other changes a little bit.
Yeah.
And that takes some navigation sometimes, I think.
Well, I also think that for our own kids, they did not grow up around grandparents, right? I mean, they only ever had one grandparent alive throughout Cars their childhoods. Well. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. and that person lived, you know, 3,000 miles away. So they didn't grow up. They didn't grow up knowing what's it like to have aging grandparents. What's it like to be a grandparent? And even so, in some ways, we didn't either, you know, because I had some experiences with that, but you didn't have any experience of grandparents mm-hmm. around. And so we're trying to figure out, well, what kind of grandparent do we want to be, or what kind of parenting do my what kind of nurturing do my parents need, right? Our kids have to figure that out, what kind of needs. And sometimes they've overstepped and tried to say, no, we don't want you to do that, blah blah blah, and they give a reason or whatever. But most times they've been almost as great as, like, by saying, well, they seem to be managing, so we'll engage when they need us. So if they are good enough to communicate their needs, you know, then we'll hear about it, right? Or they'll hear about it, and then they'll kind of step into, well, what do you need from us, or whatever.
Can that be reciprocal, where you address them with your needs?
That's what I'm saying.
That's what she's saying.
I'm saying that I think that's what's happening, that, and some people have said, and there's studies out there, too, that say that most female children will respond more regularly with their parents than male ones. And that's not to say our kids don't do that, but with three males, they're going to step in when we express our needs, right? I think more than anything. But so that's one thing that's had to change for us. We've had to communicate to them when things have changed.
Yeah, and that's big, because sometimes you're not used to communicating needs to children.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So that's a bit of a shift on our end, where we have to sort of say, oh, this is a real need. I need to talk to my family, my children, about this. So they are aware, right?
Yeah, or this is what's happening.
Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, like, we're kind of trying to figure out, how much do we communicate to them? Because we don't want them to worry too much. Because in my mind, I think they've already got enough worries raising their kids or looking after their huge property, you know. So there's some things there that I feel like they've got a lot of worries about. So I don't want to add to it. But on the other hand, when we don't communicate and they find out later, they're not too happy about that, right?
Right.
They express that to us.
That's why I say it's a negotiation thing in terms of how much do you share and at what point, and mm-hmm. and how do you navigate that without putting too much pressure on them or too much giving them way too much information about what's going on and mm-hmm. dealing with it between you two, like the two of you, and as long as you can.
I think there's another piece of that too, is that as we age, do we rely on our kids for our social nurture, you know, or not, right? I mean, we've been going all along having our own set of friends, right? But now that we're getting quite a bit older, maybe it's not so old in our 70s, but
Septuagenarian is old.
Yeah, so are we, you know, so now we have to be careful, are we relying on our kids for our social time? And is that fair,
yeah,
right?
And
or not, right?
I think we are, in terms of our two grandkids that are close here.
That's very different. I don't think we are. I think
that's
grandkids.
That's social nurturing.
But the grandkids are young, like they're 5 and almost a year.
Yeah,
and so that's a different stage than you guys are in.
Relationship.
Oh yeah, adult grandchildren.
And so there's still a lot of hands-on with the kids, and they still want to be with grandma and grandpa or Gaga and Pa. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's, you know, what's ringing in my head is the memory of my grandmother after my grandfather died, who had a chair in our living room. She moved in with us, and she knitted or crocheted, I can't remember what, but my mom would always complain that she forgot how to do it, so she was just moving the needles and who knows what would come out. But also, that was her mother-in-law.
Right.
And there was a significant resentment there that she would now have to care for her.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, though I wasn't privy to it, there must have been needs that she had, like maybe incontinence, I don't know what it was, whereby they had to think of putting her into a senior's home. And she was there for, I think, not even a year, and then died.
Yeah.
And she was with us really only wanting to be with Grandpa mm-hmm. in heaven.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
were very religious.
Yeah.
So. And it was sad.
Yeah.
Though, yeah. So we didn't get any nurturing from our grandmother during that time, for sure.
Yeah.
And prior, actually, my grandfather was somewhat nurturing, but my grandmother was, I don't remember. Maybe it was the boys got more from the grandfather than the grandmother.
In those times, that might have been,
very,
right?
Very possible.
Because mm-hmm. I feel like the same thing happened with me with my paternal grandmother who lived with us. Mm-hmm. You know, for 3 years, and I was a child between the ages of 10 and 13, you know, really a pivotal time in my life to have a grandmother available to sit at the table and chat with us and, you know, have conversations and learn things from her. And you know, it was a different kind of nurturing, right? It was for me, it was a key spiritual nurturing time, right? Mm. Because my father had walked away from the church and my grandmother had not. And so she would talk about those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And I went to church with her and was baptized and confirmed, you know, in the Roman Catholic Church. So, so it was a different kind of parenting, nurturing time. And I value that time. And I don't ever remember a moment when my mom resented it, because my mother had to go out and work. And, you know, because my father wasn't a reliable person to do that. And my mother worked outside of the home so much that my grandmother took care of us. And it was a beautiful moment. But I can't imagine doing that to either of my my families.
From what I understand, you told me, she was responding to a need. There was
yes.
a need there. She had to be there to do that. Maybe we would do that if the need arose within our families too, right?
And I think that's exactly what we're doing with our young grandchildren, is responding to the need that our daughter and son-in-law have in terms of hands-on now.
Yeah.
And I can remember feeling very isolated at times when our children were growing up, because we were so far away from hands-on grandparents, and they would have gladly helped, but we were just too far away from them. So mm-hmm. We did have friends, and that was helpful, and a lot of support through our workplaces, and mm-hmm. But it still was a missing piece, which is why I was so determined not to have my children experience that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah,
because it's too hard. I had both sets of grandparents all the way through growing up until both my grandfathers died in their 60s. But it makes a big difference when you have a sense of who you are and where you came from in terms of your ancestors.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that that's exactly how our two sons felt when we started talking about moving back to our home province when we retired, right? And they said, whoa, wait a minute, we grew up without grandparents around, and we'd really like it if you were around for our kids. We'd like this pattern, you know, to change. And so we thought about that, and we said, yeah, this is a need from our children, and it's also a way to develop a new kind of grandparenting model that we hadn't been around. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's kind of evolved into a conversation about grandparenting, but that it still is about how are we nurtured? How are we still continuing to nurture, and how are we now being nurtured in that context, I guess.
I guess one of the thoughts popped into my head throughout all of this sharing is the word respect comes up. Like when you're dealing with, say, family relationships, and this isn't something I think unique to seniors and being nurtured, but there's a respect aspect. You know, I've witnessed over the years sometimes when a parent or parents start to decline in terms of some abilities, sometimes children will step in and just like be overbearing and just over controlling and without respecting any kind of boundaries that the parent has. And it works the other way too, where grandparents will kind of barge in and, you know, step in and step on children's toes and their parenting style without a sense of respect. So, you know, I think somehow in this whole nurturing aspect, being respectful of one another is a key lesson that you kind of learn throughout life or try to apply, but maybe it becomes especially maybe important in sensitive moments, you know, like when say a senior is losing some kind of ability or losing some kind of independence, or when we see say a child trying to parent and not perhaps functioning the way we'd like them to. There's still a sense that we have to respect where they're at. So easy to say and hard to do.
Yes.
Yes.
Can we talk a little bit, yeah, and I'm thinking what I might say, about cognitive nurturing? Mm,
sure.
Like I know
I was just going to bring it back to that.
Mm-hmm. Signe does a lot of word puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard on the radio a while ago that there was a study done on that saying that it doesn't improve cognitive function. And I was surprised to hear that. Now, I'm not saying that is the case, but it was one voice in that conversation saying, a doctor saying that there's no proof that it works at all. So I don't do word puzzles anyway, so I wasn't discouraged by that, but I do try to read every night and to understand clearly what's being said by authors that I respect, often about death and dying, and about
climate change
and issues pertaining to aging, and yeah, so reading is important to me, and I don't read as fast anymore.
Mm-hmm. No.
I read word by word and then try to get the sentence, and I stop and say, now, do I understand this?
Yeah.
And if I don't, I read it again and again and again. Mm-hmm. So cognitive functioning definitely is slowing down. And though maybe it was always that way, I was never that bright.
No. Well, you had to have been bright to get,
just dogged.
Yeah.
Just dogged.
But you know, I think that's a learning style. It's not so much a cognitive style. And I say that because I am a person easily distracted, right? I can start something and then get distracted and go off onto something else. Mm-hmm. When I read, and this horrified a lot of my classmates over the years, I wrote notes in the margins.
Oh, I do too, and all my books are ruined by that.
I know, they're all ruined by that. But I really don't care because I need to take that paragraph and say, what are the three main thoughts in here,
and
right?
Teach it.
And then teach it, and then comprehend it. Like, so there's all kinds of steps to that. So I find that's a learning style. And now maybe I'm going to find out that's different as I age, right?
Yeah, like, what now? Why would you make notes in the side? You're not teaching anymore.
No, so I'm not teaching. But in order to understand that, I find that my comprehension isn't as quick as it used to be, right?
Yeah.
And I have to go back to either, I will say some of that is laziness. Google. I got to Google it, right? Google.
Yeah,
right?
I don't Google anymore. AI, that's where it's at.
Yeah, but I'm saying that that's my learning style, right?
Yeah.
And so
no, I hear you.
I'm thinking to myself, it's taking me a little longer. You're right. But I don't know that that's changed my learning style. That has always been my learning style.
Yeah, my margins in the notes now pertain to what I find interesting and very important. I put stars. And I underline. And I do go back every now and then to see, okay, I think I read this, but what did I get out of it? And I go to the underlining or to the stars.
And then I write notes.
Oh, and then
I write notes too. You know,
back to the puzzles. They may not contribute to cognitive health. And I might dispute that, but
yeah,
they do give me an indication if I'm declining, struggling, like if I'm all of a sudden can't remember how to spell a word that I used to know how to spell, like that's an indication to me that we need to pay attention to this maybe. And
yeah,
I think so. Here's my bias coming out, I guess. I think all of us, every single senior, needs to have a baseline cognitive assessment to be working from as we age.
Yeah, I've had a couple.
You've had a couple, but they were later.
It wasn't good.
And one of them was one you were, before you had your shunt and you were so foggy, like that one I don't think really counts.
Yeah. Well, after they asked, I remember this, a list of seven things. Mm-hmm. Well, I could hardly remember one or two after the shunt.
Yeah.
You know, because
Before.
Now I'm not sure if I could remember seven. Yeah. That's a lot. Mm-hmm. And I remember the doctor asking about one of the questions, and I think this was, it was in Ontario, and I think he was testing memory, about American presidents.
Yeah, it was a standardized
test. So it must have been an American standardized test. Mm-hmm. And I knew many of them, but not all of them, and I couldn't remember American presidents.
Yeah, well, some of that's context, right? Because where if you weren't raised in the United States, it's probably less significant, and maybe it wasn't something you had to memorize when you were going to school, which I certainly didn't have to.
And seven Canadian prime ministers? I don't know if I could come up with that.
Yeah, okay. Seven significant ones?
Well, the seven, liberal ones would come to mind.
There you go. Well, that's all you need. Yeah.
And Joe Clark.
Yeah. And Joe Clark.
So how do we nurture our cognitive abilities? What is the best way to do that?
That's a good question. Yeah. AI didn't answer that.
Well, for me, I think sometimes it's engaging in conversation with others so that I can follow a conversation, right, and add to that and be engaged in that. So that's one of the ways. I'm a puzzle person too, not so much a word puzzle, but I love Sudokus and other kinds of number kinds of puzzles and things, and then jigsaw puzzles.
I love jigsaw puzzles.
A lot of jigsaw puzzles, right? So those things give me some cognitive nurture. Surprisingly, in some ways, this was kind of a negative experience, but having Rick in the car with me and reminding me of a pedestrian on the side of the road or watch for that car coming out of that. But, you know, he narrates as I'm driving. Right?
And that's nurturing? Okay.
No, in some ways, at first I was like, I am so ticked off at this behavior and I don't know how to get him to get out of the car and let me just drive, right? But then I started to think about that, and I thought, you know what? He's probably noticed some of my cognitive diminishing, right? Am I noticing everything? Now, I'm not trying to speak for you, but I'm saying I had to start thinking about it on your side of it. Are you also having issues with driving and needing to remind, so that both of our minds are going together at the same time to figure out if we're driving correctly or safely or whatever?
My opinion? Yeah. Driving in Winnipeg? Always takes two people.
It is a scary experience. It can be very scary.
So there you go. See, those. So there's a negative and a positive to that. I think he's questioning my driving ability, or I think he's trying to help us navigate through this city of driving.
We go through the same exchange.
It's the same
often.
Dynamic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Vehemently.
Yes. Emphatically.
Some days I just say, shut up.
Yeah.
Stop.
Let me drive.
Let me drive. And other days I just let it roll on.
Well, I noticed when I went into the refit center, this is the gym that we go to, a couple times I've bounced off the curb as I make the right turn.
Oh, it's in. Such a short.
Yeah, but those curbs are too tight.
It's like they're protruding. I think it's the physical protrusion, not me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because
but
I've seen other cars go and they just bounce all over it.
Yeah. Just to shift direction a bit. When you talk about cognitive nurture, one of the things came to my mind is sort of the interplay between, say, physical, spiritual, emotional. Because, like, for example, you nurture your brain when you are physically active, you know, when you've got enough, you know, oxygen rushing to your head.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So there's a physical fitness aspect to it. There's a, you know, spiritual aspect to it where, you know, say mindfulness and yoga, that all, I guess I see the interrelationship between the whole various parts of our system, you know, and that you need sort of all of them working. I think that's another way to my mind, to keep cognitively active one and nurtured.
One of the things I've been intent upon doing but not doing it is introducing myself to some people at the refit, yep, at the gym.
Oh, yeah?
Because I see them almost every time I'm there, and I have no idea who they are or what their name is. Mm-hmm. There's a few people, and I'm sure they'd be amenable to some kind of social, you know, social engagement.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I feel rather lonely working out there all on my own. If I don't see you guys or a few other people there, it's like, okay, I went through all this and didn't say a word to anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of strange in a very tight-knit social context. A lot of people gathered together. Just seems odd.
Yeah, it does take reaching out and putting yourself out there and introducing yourself. There are a couple of women that I've gotten to know just through the change room, because we tend to be there at the same time. We're not doing the same things, but we go to the same area, and then we have the conversations, and that's so lovely. I love that. We ask about the cats. She's got cats. I've got cats. You know, it's nice.
Yeah, and I've talked hockey with one guy. I don't remember his name, but we introduced each other.
Yeah.
Well, it takes a while.
He had a Boston sweater on during the playoffs.
Oh, shame on it.
I know. You know, but I found out he was a coach and still coached hockey. And he's not that old. I wouldn't call him a senior.
Yeah, that the social interaction also helps. Nurturing. One of the thoughts I had, though, was when you talk about shifting things, like I've gone to that same gym for years, and when I was working, employed, often I just have so much time to be there. I've got to go there. So I didn't want to sit there and interact, and I'd watch some of these other retired people, you know, standing around for 20, 30 minutes just chatting, and I'm going, I don't have time for this. So I would tend to not want to interact. Now that's tended to shift, right? Now I have the time. So the idea
it's
of
a little more,
engaging people is more appealing.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I don't like to hang around forever, but I do to have the conversations with people that I see there lots, and it's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Neat.
I think, we've developed more social interactions at the gym the last couple of years than we have in all the more than decade that we've been going there, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's been a little bit helpful to sort of see a different perspective ourselves and on
fitness and nurturing.
On fitness and nurturing. Nurturing, right?
Yeah.
It's quite different.
It is.
The other thing that really surprised me about the gym, too, is that staff, there's usually at least one staff walking the track.
Yeah, and they're available.
And they're available, and they just chat.
Yeah, I think they've been trained to do that.
Yeah,
to be socially engaged.
That they're geriatric caretakers, right? And I'm not one of the people who wants to stop and talk to a staff person, but I have talked to them if they've stopped me and had conversation. But I also think that says something about the nurturing that is important in that fitness.
And the pervasive need.
And the need
that they recognize as an institution.
Yeah. And I think that's, it's very important.
Like just a hello one morning.
Yeah.
Or something like that can make a difference to a lonely, isolated person.
And I think for some people that is one of their primary places to interact or to have social engagement.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a great place to do it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
But I like what you said about integrating these nurturing aspects, because they aren't separate from one another, are they?
No, you're right.
No,
they really aren't. Yeah. And I know that when I do my runs around that track, it is a very spiritual thing for me still to be running.
Nice.
And that I can still do it is amazing. And listening to something that inspires me, or music that inspires me, or it's just a whole sort of sensory experience that takes in a lot of these things.
I really like that
integrated
that we've been able to have that conversation about individual aspects of nurturing, but also the integration of it in where we're seeing it in our lives and yes. and how it's impacting us as we age.
And my fitness watch reminds me every so often. I'm sitting there reading a book, and all of a sudden goes ding, and says, time to stand up. You know?
Yep.
In other words, you know, time to do, time
really?
To just, yeah,
yeah.
Time
oh,
to, time
I would
to
hate
not
that.
Just...
I'd smash the watch.
Or every so often it will say, get take your a body moment moving. To reflect on you, how your day is going.
Oh.
I'm like, I don't want to reflect right now. I know how it's going.
You but know? Maybe you need it, right?
But maybe you need it. Yeah. How do you know? Like, at nighttime, there's always a message as you prepare for your
really?
Sleep mode. Yeah, and it tells you.
I loved
well,
that you got
an
Apple Watch for your 70th birthday.
Yes, it was out of necessity, but there you go. Yeah.
I thought it was better for the health.
It does more health tracking.
You know,
he likes the tracking of it.
That's what comes to mind for spiritual nurturing, I'm just noticing here,
mm-hmm.
is music can be that.
Oh, yes.
And I find it very important for me to, like, I've got a liked, named liked, playlist on Spotify.
Okay.
And I was trying to think the other day, why is that so important to me? If I don't listen to that, any portion of it in one day, I feel bad that I've missed something.
Uh-huh.
And part of the reason, I think, is that it... And this is a metaphor, and it may sound a bit sappy, but it softens my heart.
Mm.
You know, it reminds me of love.
Yeah.
And these singers are pouring their heart out in this music, and that's the kind of music I like. So I like country and western because of that.
Mm.
I never used to.
Did you know that ages you too, that term? It's not
what
called
does?
Country and western.
Oh, what is it called
it's just
now?
Country.
Just country.
Oh, just country. Oh my God, I didn't know that, actually.
I know, yeah. My kids taught me that when I kept saying it about 10, 15 years ago. They said, stop calling it that.
So
it's
I'm
called 10, country.
15 years behind.
More than
but
that.
You like the
country.
Music.
I like country.
The music is good.
But and it's especially the men that pour out their hearts in that music, which is uncharacteristic in most social contexts.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I make sure when I walk at the gym, for example.
You have.
And then in the summer when I can get outside, when it's not minus 40, I listen to my...
Yeah.
And that's where headphones are so important.
Uh-huh.
To me, anyway, I just love headphones.
But that reminds me of another, I guess, spiritual, emotional thing that you do in your intention, is you're at the leaf often in the winter, and then you will post... some sort of a photograph.
Oh yeah.
And then have shared a bit of research you've done on it. And I think those are really inspirational. I know we've talked about that before. Those are inspirational, and they're also, I think, another way that you're engaging spiritually.
True.
Yeah.
I wax and wane on that. Right now I'm waning.
Waning. No.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
the issue of I was thinking today the issue of a hardened heart versus a softening of heart.
Hmm.
You know, with what's happening around us, it's so hardened heart manifests as anger, ferocity, and there's so much of that, and I know it in myself.
Yeah.
Just an absolute friggin' intolerance of what's going on, yet minimal agency.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really painful.
Yeah.
But then to soften your heart.
Yeah, to...
Yeah, to find a way to do that. Is a nurturing too, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, and I think important for our health overall, if we're always
yes.
angry, always, I mean, there, it's been proven, those are really super negative effects on our health.
That's
absolutely,
right.
yeah.
A constant state of fight
grievance
or flight.
And
it's
anger,
called
yeah.
high blood pressure and high cholesterol, near heart attack moments of...
Yeah.
And do we want to end this podcast on that note?
I just wanted to say, the only thing that I get notification of is I have a water app.
Water app.
Oh yes.
Uh-huh. And every once in a while, you'll hear the sound of
it's
water.
Like drink,
I might even drink something. My little grandson, whenever he hears it, his head perks up and he's listening.
So what's its purpose? To drink?
To remind
drink
you to drink water.
Drink water, okay. Yeah.
Oh.
Which is another important
Yeah, the older you get, you're supposed to drink more water, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, I'm notorious. I can drink 2 cups of coffee in the morning, and then I might not drink anything until late in the afternoon, and that's way too long. So that helps me to I keep my water bottle with me, and I try to drink every time I hear that.
You know, that brings to mind, we watch a lot of British murder mysteries. What do they call them? Gentle murder mysteries.
Comforting.
They're comforting. I don't know how it can be that.
Yeah.
Cozy mysteries.
That's cozy mysteries. But there's always a human moment, usually at the end, where the people come together and they recognize what just happened and it brought them together in community.
Hmm.
And now I totally forgot what I was going to say. I had a point.
The cozy.
But it's gone.
Murder mystery.
Nurturing. Oh, about negative nurturing. That's an oxymoron, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, in these British mysteries, everybody, when they're in traumatic situations, they take a drink.
Oh, yes.
And we don't drink alcohol. So I think, wouldn't it be nice to be soothed by alcohol, even though I know that's the totally non-productive thing to do.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but have something like that.
Yeah, so but have something like that. I should grab a cup of hot chocolate quickly.
Yeah, that's right.
Or, you know, marijuana. People are using marijuana now.
Yeah.
But a gummy.
What's that?
A gummy.
Yeah, gummy.
Yeah.
And that's even appearing in some of the murder mysteries. Pop a gummy, but then it's made fun of.
We maybe have to plug into something. Time to
should we wind her up?
Wind her down. So that's today on nurture. There may be more of this in the future coming up.
But everyone should be on nurturing.
Nurturing, yeah. Take care of yourselves, everyone. We'll talk again.
Thanks for joining us today. You can find us under Seniors in the Building on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, RSS Feed Community, and possibly wherever you listen to other podcasts. Our email is forseniorsinthebuilding@gmail.com. That's the numeral 4, followed by seniors in the building, lowercase, all one word. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, stay curious and hopeful.